This is Unicopia Green Radio with your host, Farron Dancer.
Welcome to Unicopia Green Radio. This is your host, Farron Dancer. And of course, you guessed it, it's another beautiful day in Santa Fe. And that's why we're here, right? Correct. Unicopia Green Radio is brought to you each and every week by Unicopia, a public benefit nonprofit organization that is dedicated to the awareness, knowledge, and synergy that is key to our sustainable future. And you know I like to talk about sustainable thought as well. And that is staying positive, being grateful, looking around in each day, taking in our blessings, and from there, look towards creating the future that's going to be good for us individually, collectively, and for the planet, and see what flows from that kind of approach instead of just looking at the problems and being kind of worn out by them. So that'll kind of tune us up for solutions to the issues that are present. With that solution orientation, we have a couple of special guests here in the studio today. Milder. Well, that's milder than I thought. Milder, Chief Executive Officer of Solar Logic here in Santa Fe, and Bristol Stickney, the Chief Technical Officer for Solar Logic. And welcome to the studio, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Farron.
It's good to be here.
Well, thanks for being here. I've been around, the renewable energy world for some time as a builder, and I'm hardly a techno wizard, but I think I got a couple of them in the studio here today, so we're going to get down to it a little bit. And in terms of the solar thermal world, there has been well-documented some problematic issues with solar thermal over the years, and even though we know that solar thermal hot water, for instance, in my opinion, is about the lowest hanging fruit of the renewable energies that are available to us, we can make solar thermal hot water pretty affordably in the scheme of things. And I think as we progress, we're going to get into the heating piece, which is a little more technical. And but it appears that Solar Logic and the two of you amongst the other group that you've assembled has come up with some solutions to how to make solar heating more reliable and a wise choice for people as well. I want to start with Fred. Fred, what brought you to becoming the Chief Executive Officer of Solar Logic in terms of your own process? And then maybe tell us a little bit about the company and the company vision.
Sure. Thanks, Farron. Well, let me start by the reason why I'm in Santa Fe actually reflects what you said in the intro about sort of renewable, sustainable thoughts.
Oh, nice.
I'm a physicist, and I was out here in the late 1970s working up at Los Alamos, and I fell in love with the high desert. I was living in Virginia at the time, and I've spent my whole life in big cities for the most part. I fell in love with the high desert, the way it makes you feel, the way it makes you appreciate what's around, whether it's the small pieces of nature or the big pieces of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I swore that I would come back and settle in Santa Fe, and some 30 years later I did.
Was that fairly recently?
Yes. I moved to Santa Fe with my wife and family in 2006.
Okay.
So, and that's actually how I got started with Bristol. But let me just fill in a little bit in between, so I was a physicist, and then I spent 25 years in medical devices and doing things like electromechanical equipment combined with software, CAT scanners and heart support devices and that kind of stuff. So sort of state of the art, but in the electromechanical software world. And I came to Santa Fe and I built a very green house. And in the process of building a very green house, I met Bristol. Bristol designed the solar heating system in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And it works wonderfully. It provides all of my hot water and about half of my space heat, maybe a little bit more than half of my space heat. But I went into the mechanical room where all of the plumbing and all of the controls are for my solar heating system, my solar heating and hot water system. And I looked at the equipment that was there, and it was like I was shocked because it was equipment that was, in fact, it reflected technology that was 30 years old. And it worked very well.
But was the installation 30 years old?
No, the installation was 2000. It was a new house.
Oh, so it was 2006,
right.
Basically.
But the technology was basically wires and relays and little sorts of different logic elements. And it was a hodgepodge of things, which was designed brilliantly by Bristol and installed by his company at that time. And that's how I met Bristol. And the conversation started of why are we using 30-year-old technology in a world of computers? And that was some of the genesis of Solar Logic.
Sounds logical.
It seemed so at the time.
It seemed so at the time. And as things have evolved, it's making sense then, obviously, that because, you know, and we talked before the show, I have an installation at the Emerald Home that has sort of the same setup that you're talking about when you moved into your house in 2006. We're going to make sense of that, too, with the upgraded technology that you guys have evolved. So I want to hear a little bit more. I'm going to ask Bristol to chime in here right now and talk about what came next after Fred had introduced this. Well, Bristol, why are we using 30-year technology? Where did it go from there?
Well, the answer is because that's what we have. In the boiler heating world, relays and individual thermostats and things like that is what you have to work with. And that's what nearly all the mechanical heating plumbers do, right, is relays, wires, and thermostats, and they string them together as best they can.
Mm-hmm.
And my design at Fred's house was a little unusual because Fred's entire, it's like a small campus with three buildings and a barn, and it's completely off-grid.
Oh, okay.
So I had to design everything to run off of battery power, solar photovoltaic power, and I had to design it to be extremely electrically energy efficient. So the pumps that I chose and the thermostats that I chose and, you know, every electrical element in that house was chosen not only because it would work in a heating system, but also that it would save electricity.
So the least consuming pumps and things
right,
like that.
Very, very tiny little circulator pumps that run on DC power. But you have to be careful when you're choosing equipment like that because heating systems require continuous duty, very heavy duty things that will last for many decades. And so it's actually hard to find equipment like that will work off-grid sometimes.
Well, especially with those energy parameters that you're talking about.
Right.
Now you've taken the heavy-duty aspect out of it, mm-hmm, to some extent, right, with low voltage and mm-hmm whatnot. So obviously the pumps didn't last that long up at Fred's place. Is that
well, some of the pumps failed sooner than we expected them to.
Uh-huh.
The DC brush-type pumps, the ones with the little carbon brushes in them, the carbon would wear out a lot quicker than we expected. So we got a lot of experience under our belt, running Fred's house and heating. His house is heated by a very large bank of solar heat collectors, and the collectors heat all of his floors. He has warm floors throughout. They also heat his hot water for the sinks and showers, and they also heat an outdoor swimming pool. And so it's all connected. It's an integrated system. Completely everything that needs heat is connected to everything that makes heat. It's completely integrated. And that is actually what Solar Logic specializes in, is integrated heating systems, not just the hot water, not just the boiler, not just the pool heater, integrating it all together so that all the heat can go wherever it's needed from any source to anything that needs it.
Boy, that sounds like a big jump forward in the world of solar thermal.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to get you guys over to the Emerald Home and see what we can do to make things more modern, mm-hmm, in that respect. So have you experienced now the Solar Logic upgrade to your house that was built in 2006?
No, it's actually planned for installation this fall. We've been too busy producing and installing in other houses.
Oh, I see.
So we actually haven't upgraded my house yet, but it is going to be done before the end of the year this year.
Oh, I see. And then you'll have that proven technology out and about and ready to go into your installation here coming up as well. So, and have you done many installations? That would be my next question.
Yeah, we at SolarLogic, we've installed something like a dozen whole house heating systems that are fairly complex. And that's just in the last year or so.
Right. And this is across the country as well.
Yeah, in other states as well as in New Mexico.
And do those systems typically have gas or propane backup for those systems?
Mm-hmm. That's typically a lot of them have propane because that's the high-priced backup fuel at the moment. And one of them in out of state has fuel oil, and fuel oil is priced at about the same as propane these days. So that's
and with only one direction on the horizon as far as cost goes, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. You can depend that it's always going to go up.
Well, it's fossil fuel.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And so the future bodes well, especially now that some of the technological issues are being addressed and we're not using 30-year-old technology any longer, so that the sun in relationship to hot water and heating is now more viable than ever before, it seems to me.
Absolutely. And I would comment that not a lot of people realize that if you look across the energy usage in the residential spectrum, that 65% of residential energy usage is space heat and hot water, and 25% is electricity. So the really big payback, the really big opportunity for saving on fossil fuels and going to renewable sources is in heating and hot water as opposed to electricity.
Yeah, that is the lower hanging fruit, and we've seen that as the years go by, but now we've got the technology to back it up. So we're going to talk about this and a whole bunch more when we return from break in just a moment, so stay tuned.
And now you are here, I said yes.
Welcome back. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio. And I just want to remind the listeners to pick up a copy of the Green Fire Times. Green Fire Times is available on newsstands throughout northern New Mexico, and it's all about things that we talk about here on Unicopia Green Radio and a whole bunch more. And it's about sustainability and the consciousness piece and how we're going to move our culture forward in the years ahead so that we can have a happy and healthy life here in northern New Mexico. So pick up a copy. And once you do, my monthly column this month is on the prodigious power of our beliefs. So if you don't like your life currently, you might want to look at what you believe and come up with some new beliefs because it might steer you towards a little more gratifying experience as time goes by. So pick up a copy. We're in the studio with my guests, Fred Milder and Bristol Stickney from SolarLogic here in Santa Fe. Bristol, I didn't have opportunity in the last segment to get some of your personal history, so I'd like to do that now. Can you just talk about your whole evolution without taking too much time, because I know you got a rich history, and what led you to being the chief technical officer for SolarLogic?
Sure. I'm basically just a solar heating guy, and I always have been. Solar heating is my life. I started living in a solar-heated house back in 1976. Wow. At the University of Maine when I was studying engineering up in Maine. I lived in this solar-heated house through a very cold Maine winter, and we tried all kinds of things, including solar heating and wood-fired backup systems in that house in 1976. By the time I graduated with a degree in mechanical engineering, I was a solar heating guy. That's what I wanted to do. And so I started driving around the U.S. looking for solar heating jobs. And where I wound up eventually with the first good job in solar heating was here in Santa Fe at the New Mexico Solar Energy Association. And I worked for that association for something like 12 years as with various titles like associate director, director of engineering, that sort of thing, technical associate, so forth. So at the NMSEA, my job was to try to help people who wanted to do solar heating do it with a sound engineering design of some sort. So I was sort of a design assistant for the public doing solar heating for something like 12 years or so. At some point during that 12 years, I met just about everybody in the U.S. Who knew anything about solar heating. I met everybody. And people in Santa Fe, the names you might recognize are Doug Balcom, who used to be the head of the Los Alamos Solar Group, Peter Van Dresser, who lived in Santa Fe and built the first solar active solar heated house in Santa Fe, which still exists on Canyon Road. Many people like that.
How long ago was that house built? Do you recall?
Yeah, the Peter Van Dresser house on Canyon Road was originally built in the 1930s.
Oh, wow.
And Peter retrofitted as a solar heated house in 1957. So in 1957, there was a house on Canyon Road that had warm floors heated by solar hot air collectors that Peter built himself.
So this wasn't passive solar heating. This was pure active solar used with hot air collectors.
Yeah, hot air collectors that Peter had a fan that blew the hot air out of the collectors on the roof down under the floor. It was a brick-on-sand floor with air passages built into the floor. And so, yeah, it's an active solar house. And it's got a historical plaque on it, a brass plaque hanging on it, identifying it as, I can paraphrase, it identifies it as the oldest active solar house west of the Mississippi, basically, is what it is.
Wow. Historical.
But then Peter Van Dresser also was heavily involved with designing the first passive solar houses in Santa Fe, as was everyone in the Solar Energy Association at that time in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
And I worked with Peter on a number of projects, some of them up in El Rito, New Mexico, where he built passive solar houses out of native materials and that sort of thing. And then eventually my contact with all these solar people in Santa Fe led me to, you know, contact with other national figures like Amory Lovins. I moved to Colorado for a couple of years and worked very closely with him on energy efficiency issues. Then eventually, you know, moved back to Santa Fe and worked as a solar heating design consultant right out of my house, where I've been living in Tasuki for something like 30 years.
Wow.
So
you picked the right part of town if you're going to camp out like that.
Yeah. So at some point, I was a design consultant and a partner, a man named Boaz Seufer, who still works here in Santa Fe in the energy industry.
Mm-hmm.
We partnered, got together, started a company called Cedar Mountain Solar. And Cedar Mountain Solar was a design build company. I designed the solar heating aspects of just about any retrofit or new house. And then the people at Cedar Mountain Solar would build it. So we had our own people building our own designs. And we did that for many years. This company, I guess, went out of business around 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, by that time, we had built over 100 large solar heated house installations of my design, over 100 of them, something like 125. So I had a lot of experience under my belt by the time I met Fred's architect first, and then I met Fred. I worked with Fred's architect to design his house, using all of the experience we had at Cedar Mountain Solar to, you know, do this big off-grid project for Fred. And then eventually Fred and I and Boaz created this other company called Solar Logic, which still exists and where we're doing all our work now.
Mm-hmm.
And Solar Logic is basically a design and control company. We don't build, but we design and control. So we design solar heating systems. As part of the design, we design the controls to control it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we work with anybody, any, you know, licensed installer to install it properly. And we will, you know, coach them and train them if they need it.
That sounds like a great service that's needed in that realm. And you guys can be the glue now to bring all this together, I would think. Fred, just give us a quick little backdrop on the evolution of Solar Logic in terms of the timeline and how it's come into its current time and space.
Well, as I mentioned, I met Bristol because he designed the solar heating system in my house, and it was Cedar Mountain that did that installation as well. So that was 2007. 2008, the company was started, Bristol, Boaz, and myself. And our goal from the beginning was to be a design and controls company, and to standardize the way things were done so that heating contractors and plumbing installers would have a very easy time of putting systems in. We wanted to be able to take a plumber or a standard heating contractor, somebody who was used to, let's say, putting in radiant heating systems, and turn them into a solar installer as well. So that if their client said, you know, I'm thinking about renewable energy, can we make my heating system and my domestic hot water system solar, his answer or her answer would be yes. And we know the people to help us do this, and we know the equipment to buy. And what we've managed to do remarkably is to take a whole lot of different jobs and decisions that need to be made in the mechanical room when you have solar heating and backup heating and you have domestic hot water and space heating, and we've managed to package it into one box, one very smart box.
Okay, well, we're going to get into the details of that a little bit more when we return from break in just a moment. Welcome back. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio, and I'm here in the studio with Fred Milder, Chief Executive Officer from Solar Logic, and Bristol Stickney, the Chief Technical Officer from Solar Logic. Before the break, Fred, you were describing how Solar Logic has created the capacity to pull the mechanical room together into one sort of unified approach. And so let's continue that conversation. And then there's something called the SLIC, which is in keeping with what we're talking about here, I assume. So roll it.
Okay, well, if you think about a solar heating system for a home, essentially you've got two sources, one which you can control, which is the boiler, and one which you can't control, which is the sun.
Right.
And then you have loads, which hopefully you do control in the sense of that you set thermostats and you have a temperature that you want from the domestic hot water. But, for example, four people come in and take a shower, all of a sudden you've used your domestic hot water, and something has to make a decision as to whether the available heat, whether that's a boiler or solar, whether you're going to do continue doing space heating with that, or you're going to make domestic hot water with it to recover the temperature in your domestic hot water tank. So you're immediately faced with decisions, and when you have one heat source, the sun, that you can't control, and one that you can control, and one's free and one's not free, you have decisions to make there too. So the idea of integrating the entire heat sources and heat loads into one control system is what Solar Logic is about. And it's not only one control system, but it's also, from the design standpoint, it's one plumbing system. So it's not, we don't design a heating system and then tack on solar. We design a plumbing system that combines all the heat sources and all the heat loads into one unified whole. And then we control it as one unified whole. And so you can imagine that in order to make a lot of sophisticated decisions, the natural thing to use is a computer.
And so if somebody's building a new house and they're designing their mechanicals from the ground up, do you guys get involved in the plumbing design simultaneous to the heating and hot water design? It's all integrated like that?
Is
that
what absolutely, you're saying? Absolutely. That we get contacted with people, and for a new house, or if it's a retrofit, they want to add solar and they want to do a retrofit, or they're adding maybe several rooms to their house, and they're retrofitting the mechanical room in some way, we will get involved. And we have a standardized plumbing called a primary-secondary loop configuration. We don't have to go technically into what that means, but the important point is that it makes every job very similar to every other job in terms of the plumbing configuration. And then our controller, we have the same controller for every job, and it's called the SLIC, which is the Solar Logic Integrated Controller, and it controls the entire heating system. So it controls the solar sources, it controls the boiler, it controls the heat being delivered to the rooms, it controls the heat to make domestic hot water, and it does it all with an intelligence and a goal of using the free heat as much as possible immediately, as opposed to trying to store it someplace and then take it out later, which is not as efficient mm-hmm. as using it directly.
Well, you lose some of that heat in trying to store it, I would imagine.
That's right. You lose it in storing it. You lose some in taking it out, and also you lose some if it's just sitting there, because it's you know, not everything preserves all of the heat inside it perfectly.
Sure.
Right. So you, there's three places where you're losing it, and if you can deliver, for example, the solar heat directly to your floors when the sun is shining, then you've saved yourself three places where you would have lost heat already.
Wow. It sounds like you're optimizing the sun here.
Right. We want to optimize the sun, but we also want to be careful that the clients, right,
We want to optimize the clients.
Definitely. We want to optimize their happiness.
Yeah, optimize their happiness. So, Bristol, one of the big issues in the world of solar thermal heat has always been the dumping of the excess heat in the summertime. And that's always been sort of a technical snafu in designs and you know, where you dump the heat and how you make people happy and how you dump it. So how's that evolved, and where is the state of the art in that realm at this time?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because, you know, for about 10 years I worked as a solar repairman, and I drove around in a plumbing truck repairing solar water heaters. And it seemed like the biggest reason, the most often the reason why a solar water heater would fail is due to overheating. And so overheating has to be controlled in order to make solar heating reliable. And the slick controller that Fred was just talking about has, since it's computer-based, it's based on a computer, and we program the computer, and we joke about the fact that the slick is a computer with basically my brain built into it, because it does everything that I would do if I was in your boiler room turning the knobs and, you know, flipping the switches on and off. It acts like I would act if I was there. And so one of the things I would do if I was there and your solar heater, you know, heat collectors were overheating, mm-hmm. is first I would try to find a reasonable place to put the heat, somewhere where it could actually be useful. So the slick controller looks around for a water tank that can take more heat in the water.
Ah.
And then it looks around, if the water tanks can't take it, it looks around for a space heating location where it can put heat without overheating it, without causing discomfort in the house. And so it'll start dumping heat into what we call heat dissipation zones, which are usually the zones in your house that have concrete floors.
Right.
And the concrete will absorb a little bit of heat without overheating the room. And so it's very subtle. The extra heat goes away, and the homeowner usually doesn't even know it's happening.
Right.
But
it sounds like you've been able to direct some of this heat into a practical application, and just instead of just all of it being dumped somewhere,
which can
create some problems too, especially if you have plenty to dump.
That's right. That's right. If you have way too much heat and nowhere to put it, things can get too hot.
Right.
And that is the slick controller will allow that to happen, but only as a last resort. So, for instance, if there's too much heat and there's nowhere to put it in the concrete floors and nowhere to put it in the water tanks, it will choose a zone that it knows won't cause any trouble, like the garage floor mm-hmm. or like an ice melt zone outdoors, which surprisingly quite a few high-end homes have, is a little bit of outdoor sidewalk that has warm tubing under the sidewalk.
Right.
And so it'll dump it there, and it will do it in small increments. It will take some heat out of the collector, dump it into the heat dump of last resort, and then stop. And it'll wait for the collectors to heat up again. And so it's just taking a small amount of heat and dumping it in a safe location of last resort. So that's and this is actually how most overheat protection is done today, not just with the slick controller, but with other control systems out there, is they do what's known as heat dumping in a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
But we at SolarLogic have taken this even further. We've actually reinvented the solar collector system, and we've come up with solar collectors that are self-cooling. And so it's, you know, if you follow our plumbing recommendations, if you are a heating plumber and mm-hmm. you follow our plan, you can actually create a big bank of solar collectors that cool themselves.
Boy, that sounds like a big innovation.
Right. Yeah. So the idea is that if there's nothing useful that you can do with the heat, you just basically turn off the pumps and the collectors stay at a reasonable temperature and don't overheat. I wanted to mention actually one other thing that you can do with the excess heat in the summer, that the slick handles, because it ties into another aspect of what we've done with our controller, which is if you happen to have a storage tank in your system, and many systems do, you take the excess heat and you put it in the storage tank during the day, and then at night you can actually use your collectors to take heat out of the storage tank and send it back off into the night sky. And that's known as night sky radiant cooling. Mm-hmm. And that was actually pioneered by Bristol.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, we've been hearing this terminology for many years, and mm-hmm. it was your baby.
Yeah, not too many people realize that some years ago, Governor Richardson gave some money to a research project, and I was one of the principal investigators, and Mark Challum, a local architect, was also one of the principals.
We had Mark on just a few weeks ago.
Well, together we did a whole summer's worth of testing where we took solar radiators and tested how well they could cool. They could be used for cooling. We actually tested them, monitored them with data recording instruments, and wrote a big 100-page report on the subject.
So I didn't realize that the collectors are actually part of that night sky radiant cooling.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually getting the night temperature into the collector somehow and moving that into the house?
Through the magic of radiation, thermal radiation.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's called night sky radiant cooling, is because when you pump hot fluid through a big collector plate, it heats up and radiates by thermal radiation up to the sky. The heat just goes away by radiation. And that's what our research project was about. We wanted to measure how quickly we could get rid of heat and use solar collectors backwards, if you will, for cooling.
Right. So you're dissipating the heat and bringing in some cool temperatures at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a win-win.
And we actually have a system, the Los Alamos County Waste Transfer Station up in Los Alamos has one of our systems in place, and it does a lot of night sky radiant cooling because the building is pretty warm during the summer months.
Well, if Los Alamos grabbed onto it, they must have some confidence in what you're about. Well, we'll get back to this in just a moment. We have to satisfy our commercial people out there in advertising realm, but we'll be back in just a moment, so stay tuned.
Don't worry about a thing.
Welcome back one last time. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio, and I'm in the studio with Chief Executive Officer from SolarLogic, Fred Milder. Hi, Fred.
Hey,
and Bristol Stickney, the Chief Technical Officer from SolarLogic. And Bristol, I want to just run down. You've got six principles that really pertain to the solar thermal heating world. And I think the listeners will find this really fascinating because these are the six principles that it really entails to do it right and to have all the benefits all lined up in terms of solar thermal. So let's run them down. The first one's called reliable.
Well,
and we can all relate to that.
Right. Well, first, let me just say that these six principles are the guiding principles behind SolarLogic and behind every solar heating system that I've designed in the last 15 years or so. I found that solar heating can be done wrong, and when it's done wrong, it breaks down within 2 years and then becomes useless. Mm-hmm. So I've come up with these principles of design, and I write about them in a monthly magazine article every month. It's a magazine for plumbing engineers.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to do is get people oriented that solar heating isn't something you do lightly. You have to plan it and you have to do it right in order to get the savings over the long term. You want savings for decades after you install a solar heating system. And so reliable is number one. It doesn't matter how efficient it might be or it might have been in the test laboratory if it's not reliable. Mm-hmm. If you install it and it breaks down in 2 years, you get nothing from it.
Well, yeah. and the client who now is out of warranty is not too happy at that.
That's right. What you do and there goes, from it is an angry call.
There goes the savings, you know, yeah. because now we have expensive maintenance.
Right. And so this the reason why reliable is first, is the first of the six principles, is because without reliability, you really have nothing to offer. Mm-hmm. And when I worked at the Solar Energy Association, one of our biggest concerns was what we called counter demonstrations, where someone would do solar to demonstrate how good it was, but then it would break down, and that's a counter demonstration. You just demonstrated that solar's no good. So
yeah.
So you know, reliable is number one.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense, yeah. And I think that with the SolarLogic system now, we can look at more reliability in terms of the technology than we looked at in the past. So that's a huge leap forward.
Because we have a system that has a computer in it, that computer actually hangs on the internet. SolarLogic is able to monitor it from anywhere, as can the owner of the system. But you can watch the way it works all the time and verify that, in fact, it is doing the thing that it's supposed to do.
Well, great. And that'll tell us, number two, if it's effective or
that's
not.
That's right.
Okay, so that's let's right. talk about effective and think user satisfaction, it says right here. Right.
Yep. Well, the second principle of good solar heating design and installation is to make it effective. And effective is a catch-all term that implies that whatever it's supposed to do, it does it well, and the proof is that the owner is very happy with it.
Yeah.
So it's not effective unless the owner is really happy with it and really happy with it over a very long time.
Yeah.
Time period.
Well, and durability ends up being one of the green categories that isn't discussed that often. But, you know, you can bring in all the renewable technologies and resource-efficient materials and all these different things. But if they don't last and you got to replace them, then that's not very green. So the reliability and the effectiveness kind of go hand in hand. And this is almost sounding like a six principles of a good relationship.
Yeah,
number three
right.
is compatibility
that's
or
right.
compatible.
That's right.
So let's talk about that.
These principles are more than just solar principles, believe me.
I can feel that.
Yeah. Compatibility when it comes to solar heating means that, let me give you an example of non-compatibility. Let's say you build a house and you put a roof pond on it. Now, roof pond houses are a real thing. They really did get built and installed and tried out back in the 70s and 80s. But here's the thing. If you put a roof pond on a house, basically something as heavy as a small swimming pool on your roof,
right?
Who's going to want to build that? Who's going to want to warranty it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it compatible with the construction industry? Does anybody know how to do that?
Right. And do you have a good roof underneath the pond?
Yeah, right. Is it ever going to leak? Are the people living in the house going to worry about that?
Right. Having a pond come in on the bed in the middle of the night?
Yeah. Is it compatible with like just human, the way humans think?
Right.
No. No, the roof pond wasn't compatible, and that's why only about a half a dozen of them were ever built.
Right.
So when I do solar heating, I try to make everything in the solar heating system compatible with everything about the job, including the contractor, who's doing the work, what their skills are. I use a lot of hot water and hot glycol in my systems, and I want to make the pressure in the plumbing systems compatible with what normal boilers have so that boiler people can work on it and it's compatible with their understanding. So that's what compatibility is. It's, again, a catch-all
right.
you know, group.
But it's
of
compatibility things. Between the different mechanical systems.
Compatibility
but also
with the way buildings are done,
okay.
the way they're built,
right.
the way the mechanics are installed in them, the people that work on them.
And the people that work on
yep.
them.
And also the people who live in them. You know,
they have to be compatible with the system,
right,
too.
Right, right. I mean, if you overheat the building all the time, like some of the passive solar houses, in the past have been overdone and they get too hot. Well, that's not compatible with human comfort.
Well, we're going to have to move a little more quickly. We're running out of time. But number four is elegant. Use less, do more. Yeah. Fewer parts mean lower cost and fewer things to go wrong.
Elegance in a heating system just means that when you're designing it, you try to make everything in the system have at least three good reasons to be there.
Oh, wow.
You know, you want it to do more than one thing. You have more than one reason to have something, you know, as a component in your heat.
Otherwise, your mechanical room looks a little overwhelmed.
Right.
Yeah, and if you install a pump, for example, that you don't need, you've actually just created something that can break down.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so that leads to serviceable, which is the fifth principle.
Right. And if you have a heating system in your house, just like the engine in your car, you want it to be serviceable. You want to be able to maintain it and keep it going easily.
Okay, and then that'll lead us to the sixth and final principle, and that is efficient.
Right.
Why don't you take it, Fred?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that most people, if you ask them what would be the six principles of good solar design, they would probably put efficiency at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the reason why it's at the bottom of the list is because of the sort of like the simple thing that Bristol was saying about reliability in the beginning, which is if these other pieces are in place, it doesn't matter if it's very efficient or not, because there's something else wrong with it, which will make it either fail or be unserviceable or cost too much money or make the homeowner unhappy.
And we know it's not efficient if it breaks.
Right, exactly.
Well, you know, we've run out of time, amazingly enough. So I want to thank both of you for being here today, both Fred and Bristol. It's been a pleasure having you guys. And I want to invite the listeners back each and every Saturday at 4 p.m. We're simulcast on santafe.com, so check us out. We're also podcast, so check out the past shows as well. And we'll see you next Saturday at 4 p.m. This is Farron Dancer signing off.